What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Rockcast. Jordan here, and today we have Tony Treach on, and always great to have you on, Tony.
Well, thanks for having me on, Jordan.
Definitely.
It was definitely a learning fall. It seemed to go on for a long time, and things didn't always go as planned, but made it through. So.
Yeah, for sure. I wanted to dig into your mule deer hunt. Usually, you always do at least one early season mule deer hunt, if not more. Isn't mm-hmm. that right?
Yeah. It depends on what I draw, but yeah. This year I ended up pulling a Nevada tag. I cashed in my points for that for the early archery, and I still had a my regular Colorado deal with just hunting different 0 point units whenever I can, which now they're every year it seems like out of the units that I've hunted, they're going to 1 point units now, so there's just so many more people. But and I had a Wyoming tag too, so I guess I had three that I could have hunted in September or August.
But yeah,
the Nevada tag was, in my mind, I kind of hyped it up a little bit more than I probably should have, just because I was spending so many points, and it's never, they're kind of conservative with their tag numbers there. So it's not every year that you get to go, to Nevada unless you're, at least not some of the better units. And I, kind of went there with a little bit bigger expectations, I think, than I should have, and passed on quite a few deer that they were mature, and they probably should have killed them, but I really never found the true giant that I was looking for. And I had a couple buddies that were also hunting the same unit cluster, and one of them found a giant, and it kept my spirits up or hopes up. But between hunting and my scouting down there, I was there for, it was over 3 weeks. And I never really saw what I would consider, a true giant, one that just mm-hmm. got me really pumped up and ready to go getting after him. But I learned a few things about myself. That heat down there for a northern guy like me, that was definitely the most taxing part of that whole hunt, besides, not finding what I was looking for.
Yeah.
But it was a learning experience for sure. I think from now on, I'm going to maybe apply for the late archery tags, or at least not the ones in August. That's just a harsh condition for someone who's more comfortable in probably 20 degrees than he is 100.
Yeah, dude, for sure. Did you get to scout those?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I got down there. I had about 5 days, in Nevada, and, they give you the chance to turn the tag back in right at the last minute if you want to in Nevada. And I thought about doing it, but a couple buddies of mine encouraged me not to. And in hindsight, I'm okay with the fact that I didn't. I saw the biggest elk on the hoof I've ever seen.
Yeah, that thing's huge.
Oh, yeah. It was so big, I was like, I don't even know how big this is. I sent it to Dan Evans, who, everybody knows elk, they probably know Dan Evans. And he confirmed what I was thinking it was scoring. And it was, it's like, holy crap, I wish I had that tag.
Yeah, dude, no kidding.
But Colorado was a little bit brighter for me. I at least found right away. I got there about 4 or 5 days before the season started, and was able to find, boy, I bet $5 or $6 over 180, and two of them that were, boy, one was, I think he was just over 200, and was probably 195, and they were traveling together, and they were living in a hidden little basin super close to a trailhead that everybody was just walking right by and looking. You had to do a little bit of work to look into it, and it had to be from a certain spot to see in there. And everything was going great opening morning, and they were feeding right to where they had been bedding every day. And two elk hunters just taking a shortcut, snuck right through the basin. Well, not sneak, just walked right through and blew them out. And I spent the next 12 days looking for them and never turned them up.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was, I've had that same experience happen before. And eventually, you relocate them. It seems like last 2 or 3 years, that's a similar things happen where, they get pressured from something else, and I have to, you know, relocate them and work at it. But it usually, you know, you can easily turn them up. This time I just didn't. The pressure I saw and the amount of people in the high country was like nothing I've ever seen before. There were, you know, there were spots above tree line where there's these beautiful alpine lakes that, you know, there's always hikers, just recreational people going up there to walk around and take pictures and stuff. But I mean, on a normal year, you might see a dozen people in a day, maybe on a week, a busy weekend, 20. They were literally, the Forest Service set up like trash collection sites with little pop-up tents, handing out water and like instructions on, please stay on the trail. Don't, you know, don't trample the tundra. And Labor Day weekend, I was told that they had 1,800 people walk up one certain trail to a popular alpine lake, which I bet normally gets a couple dozen people a day on a normal year. And the damage that's being done, you know, just by people's footsteps, you know, that stuff up there above treeline doesn't grow real fast. Mm-hmm. It's going to take a long time to recover just from the damage that it incurred last year from all that additional exposure to people.
Man, but that's crazy.
Like that next year, it's bad. But the deer were just getting, and the elk were just getting pushed around like crazy. And I found, once the muzzleloader started, I had an elk tag in an adjacent unit, and I said, I'm gonna go focus on that, and found a couple of really good bulls and played with them for a while. It seemed like they had my number every time I was on the other opposite mountain glass, and in there I'd find them. And every time I went over there, all but one time they were gone. And I don't know if it was just coincidence or somehow they were picking up on the fact that I was in there, but it was a little frustrating. But for an over-the-counter unit, at least I had elk to myself. I was hunting, and I was, you know, these are both bulls that were over 320 in a OTC Colorado unit. So I'm just, the fact that I was able to chase them and get a bunch of pictures, and felt pretty lucky. So about that time, I needed to kill something. So I knew I had the Wyoming general deer tag that opened on September 15th, and I was like, I need to go use a gun. I went up to Wyoming, and that was a lot of the same. You know, I've always joked with buddies that, you know, people that don't go out west, I explained to them, like, when you go to Colorado, all the at the trailheads, it's, you know, a lot of Subarus and Jeeps and an occasional hunter mixed in with a lot of recreational, just, you know, backpackers and campers. You go to Wyoming and it's all horse trailers, and there's no mountain bikers. There's no, like, just recreational through hikers, hardly any. And this year it proved me wrong. There was every type of person up in Wyoming, and the hunters were, you know, it's a general tag for over the counter for the residents, and there must be a lot of unemployed guys or hunters up in Wyoming, because I've never seen that area like this.
Dude, yeah,
usually opening weekend's pretty bad, and then it kind of, you know, it levels out. But and we were there I hunted with Derek Henderson, and we were there the last week of the season, and it was as busy as it is normally the first week. I couldn't believe it. We actually had to try pretty hard, and I mean, usually you're passing up 170s and try to, you know, get something in the next caliber, and we were having trouble even turning up that caliber of buck. So it was COVID definitely had an effect on my seasons, just from the sheer amount of additional people in every mountain range that I hunted.
Yeah, man, it was crazy. We hunted, or I filmed, I guess, in Wyoming, kind of on that same September 15th opener, and it was wild. Like, Justin and I just went through that hunt, and there was four camps, including ours, you know, within 300 yards of us on one ridge. That wasn't counting who was off the ridge.
Yeah. You know what's bad when, you know, you're getting ready in the morning, and it looks like there's a, you know, like a parade of lights coming up every single ridge and every basin. It's pretty nuts.
Yeah, dude, pretty wild. On that Colorado tag that you got there like 5 days before season and were scouting, how did you go I guess the way that you scout, did that change from the way you would have scouted like in the summertime versus, you know, right before season?
Not really. Just, it's a matter of covering ground. And yeah. Even when I found those, the ones that, you know, that I ended up targeting opening day, I kept looking, you know, I'd check back in on them, but I'm just running ridges and different areas and getting to different vantage points and just seeing as much ground as I can. And covering the miles, you know, it's a numbers game. You know, if you put yourself in a situation where you're, you know, you only do enough hiking or walking or glassing to, you know, see 50 bucks, then, you know, maybe one's going to be really, you know, great buck. If you put yourself in a position to see 200 bucks and you walk that much further and you check out that many more spots, you're just multiplying your chances at finding something really great. So it's just how, you know, it's how much work you want to put into it. And there's a lot of, you learn a lot of, if you learn an area, you can learn, there are some, occasionally you find a nice little easy spot to get into where you can glass like crazy and find some good deer, but those are far and few between, and they're well-earned. You know, you've got to, they don't come along often, so and usually have to work pretty hard to find them.
Yeah. How many deer did you see in those 5 days, do you think?
Oh, gosh. Man. I don't know.
A lot.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're seeing that time of the year, they're still losing their summer coat there. So they got that little red glow to them. And if you've got good weather, so you clear skies, it's not as hot as Nevada. Like, you know, when I was in Nevada, those deer were sometimes bedded before daylight. Like I would literally start picking up bedded deer just at first light. Man. Like it was so hot. They were in the shade before there was even a need for shade. But in Colorado, they were up on their feet, you know, usually at least an hour after daylight. And so you could, and even, you know, when you get used to your areas where you're hunting, you know where to look before embedded too. So even during midday, I can cruise around and find, you know, deer in their beds. It's not like they're not hiding in the timber necessarily at that point. So they're in shade of rocks. They're in, you know, they're in, sometimes they're right out in the open. You know, it's windy enough and cool enough up there that they don't see the shade like they would in a lower unit that's hotter temperatures, or it's pretty nice up there. I mean, I think that's why they're there. It's moderate temperature.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of bucks.
Did you see any? So Justin and I were talking, and a lot of the scouting that he was doing, he was seeing a big gap, and Robbie was last year too. He was seeing a big. I don't know if I want to just say age gap, but he was seeing a big size gap between the bucks he was seeing. Like, you know, the good ones he was seeing were 180 plus, but the mm-hmm. other ones were like 150 inch deer. Like there seemed to be a big spread there. And we were talking about like the winter kill. It lines up with that.
In Wyoming, I'd say yes. In Colorado, there was a lot of, you know, that 150 to 175 range buck. I saw plenty of them. And Nevada was just, that was all I was finding was, you know, bucks under 180 and lots of them. I found more deer than I expected in Nevada. And I found a lot more water than I expected that the unit I was in actually holds a lot of deer. It just was missing the age class, the older age class. But in Colorado, I'd say I found a little bit of everything until season started, and then it was just crazy. And it never slowed down either. Usually in Colorado, you know, the recreational, you know, non-hunting crowd that's out buzzing around the mountain, they kind of, by middle of September, they split, you know, kids are going back to school and it may hopefully a little colder. They never left. I mean, we got that big dump of snow and everybody kind of disappeared for a little while, but as soon as that melted, they were back. And the RV places and the places I'll go to get a shower in those little mountain towns, they shut down everything usually by middle September, the third week of September. They're just, you know, they're winterizing their systems. They're usually, they don't have any business. And like I talked to them the last day I was there, I'm like, and the parking lot's just full, like every campsite's booked. And I'm like, so you're literally shutting down this weekend? She's like, yeah. I mean, we don't have a choice. We can't risk, you know, having the, you know, the system has to be winterized before it gets cold. And it's like, there was still just thousands of people. And it's like, that's, yeah.
That's insane. We kind of saw the same thing, even on those early, you know, like those August sheep hunts that we were on. Well, mm-hmm. I guess I was only on one. But yeah, it was the same thing. And usually, like, that's before any of the hunting or like anything would start. But dude, there were so many mountain bikers and backpackers, and it seemed crazy. And it was in the middle of the week.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, hopefully it's, you know, everybody gets back to work and normal life is, you know, that, or I got to find some different more areas to hunt a little further off the beaten path. I mean, I kind of thought I was before, but things change this year. It's, might be a different game from here on out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, for sure. So with those earlier season hunts, what did your gear look like? You know, I think specifically, you know, your sleep system mm-hmm. to go that light, you know, to go, to bounce ridge to ridge to ridge, like you were talking about, you know, to see, to cover the numbers for bucks.
Well, sleep system. I use a tarp tent. It's actually a two-layer shelter, but it's made out of Dyneema, and it's, I think it only weighs like 18 ounces. I have a super light pad, the Therm-a-Rest. I use a 3/4 length. I usually just put my back, you know, my backpack underneath my legs to keep them off the ground. Because with everything out of it, it's pretty flat. And then that 3/4 pad is, I think it only weighs 7 ounces, pretty light. And I've got a bunch of different sleeping bags, and I'm doing a review on one that I can't say anything about yet, but it's from a company that's never made sleeping bags before. And I use that a good amount, but it is a little bit heavier. So when I was going ultralight, I was using that Western Mountaineering 25 degree bag for most of my hunting. And I mean, I got everything dialed in pretty light. If I want to go that route, between testing the new one and actually had a few of them that I was bouncing back and forth between this year, but most of the time I find myself going to that Western Mountaineering just because it is so light.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have a review that's coming out, like a head to head with a bunch of them?
Kinda. It's kind of hard to compare them head to head because they're very different. It's a synthetic bag that, I don't want to say too much here. It won't be, the product will release won't come out until late spring.
Yep,
so
I heard about this.
So it's, I can't say too much, but I'm actually going to do some more testing now that I'm at home. I'm going to put this new bag again up against the Western Mountaineering that I have, my slick bag and a Stone Glacier 15 degree bag too. Nice. Put them all, I'm going to just basically set up a big tent in the backyard and spend the couple of cold nights in a row just really pushing it to see how far this thing will work, because it doesn't have a traditional temperature rating like a normal bag does. It's kind of got, you know, a different range, and it, you know, it's mm-hmm. it'll make more sense when the review comes out, when the product's released. But
for sure,
it's kind of made to work as a system with some other clothing products.
So. Awesome. Yeah, we'll be sure to get you back on to talk about that. So it's we can have a podcast about it when it's released.
Cool.
Yeah, for sure. So another thing I know you did a review on just recently, or maybe you didn't do a review on it, the Fulcra or the 44 mag.
Kufaru.
Yeah,
I had been using, and I used them both about equally. I've been using the Hoodlum, and it's still probably my favorite all around bag, just because I basically get everything I get in the 44 mag, just with a little bit more room for a little bit, you know, it makes it just a little bit easier to pack out a boned out deer with a full camp. But the 44 mag was, that's a badass little backpack. And actually when I killed the deer in Wyoming, that's what we had. But I also had help packing it out, so I only had half a deer. But that was, it's just like everything else Kufaru makes. It's really, there's no bad options. And they're all built. I mean, they're all going to last a long, long time. And, but the pocket, the side pockets on, everything just seems to work great. I mean, there's no downside. You can use it compressed down with basically nothing in it, and just cover ground, and it's not big and bulky. And, I don't know how many animals over the years I've shot with one of those Cafaros in like a day hunting mode with, you know, shooting your bow, you don't even know your backpack's on it. Thing, fits you so well. But
yeah.
But no, the 44 mag was, I don't even know what to say. I've just gotten so used to the Cafaros just being so damn nice. I don't even know what to, it's like, how many times can you say, like, everything works on it. It's built, tougher than anything else out there, and it just works.
For sure. It's nice having that modularity too, that you can attach whatever you want to on it. I know they can get strappy sometimes just because of that modularity, but I really like it. Like, I love being able to do that. And then when I go and I mess with like, any other pack, like, EXO is really streamlined and you can't really move straps around. And then when I'm around one like that, I'm just, if it gets frustrating every once in a while, cause I'm like, I just want to move that strap, or like, I want another one there. I don't want where it's at.
Yeah, I found that crisscrossing the straps, the upper straps, helped hold the buck out, the head, instead of just coming straight down with them. Yeah, they've definitely put a lot of thought into them.
For sure. Man, I think I'm going to use my Reckoning a little bit more this year coming up. That's just such a good pack. And like, for a while, I just got away from those open top pockets, but after pulling tripods in and out all the time and being like really mobile, glassing down a ridge where you're just putting stuff away and taking it out all the time, those open top pockets for a tripod, are just really nice. And then it's just a good size. That zipper completely unzips in the front. And then I really like those compression straps that are all separate, like the back, they're independent from the side ones. I really like that. And I really like that on the, like, I ran that Cavern a ton this year, and there's just a lot of good.
The
only thing
I didn't like about the Cavern was, in the hood when fixed it, was basically I had two matching pockets on each side. So I could put my tripod on one, with a puffy on the other side, the big, 95, but the Reckoning was one of my favorites too. The only, I love that center zip, but the only part about the Reckoning, I was just open-ended pockets on the sides. I don't know how many times you'd have to find out I'm hauling around like a pound of tree bark in there from branches and crap falling in there while I'm hiking around. But I don't even know how they're going to, I'm curious to see what these new packs are for this next year, because, in my mind, like, I don't even know how you, for me, make anything but that works better than the Hoodlum.
Man, me too. So I had an idea and I pitched it to them, and I hope they run with it. Do something, like a Hoodlum. So it'd be like it'd almost be like a Fulcrum Hoodlum Reckoning cross. So do the center zip, do the independent compression straps, do the side pockets similar to the Hoodlum, except make them like a center zip pocket like the Fulcrum has, but they're static on the side. They're not, they don't have wings to fold. And like, that for me would be on point.
Nice. Yeah, that does sound interesting.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
They'll name it after you. Maybe they'll call it the Bud Pack. They build it.
Oh man, yeah, that would be awesome. I'm going to. Have you used the muskeg a lot?
I did. Yeah. No, I got, when it first came out, I used it, and it was a little noisier than I wanted. But the rain, having the water resistance was nice. But I don't really find myself when it's really a deluge and it's just coming down, I just seek shelter anymore. It's like I could see it if I was going back to a heated camp or, a big base camp every night, it's a little bit different. But if I'm backpacking, I just don't want to get everything wet.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. So moving on from packs, another thing, I just pulled a few of your gear items that you liked on the for the 2020 top gear picks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let's roll over to boots. So you use those Lathrop and Sons. I know you really like those. What other boots did you use this fall?
Well, the Lathrop and Sons. So I'm getting to the, this has happened the last 3 or 4 years. Like every other year, so I have super high arches and they've been slowly coming down and my feet are growing. It's kind of embarrassing. Like I have so many different pair of boots, kind of a boot junkie that I don't get to wear them all. And, I went to put on my cubes, my La Sportiva cubes this year, you know, right before I left. And I'm like, oh my God, my toes are like crammed into the front. Oh. I grew another half size this year, my foot. But in the Lathrop, when I got it, was just a little bit big anyway. So now it is just absolutely money. So I use that almost exclusively. I actually had a failure on my cubes this year. That opening morning in Colorado when I was, I did wear them some, but in that opening morning, I was, well, making a big loop to get above those bucks and got to a point where I took off some layers and I was getting a little warm, went to retighten my boot and the heel lock lace on one of them pulled off 3 miles from my truck and probably another mile from the deer. It's, you know, it's an hour before daylight. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So I got no way to lace up one of my boots. And I took my Taito knife and I literally had to plunge 2 holes in the side of it to run the laces into that and then back out just to be able to create a new lace lock. And so I basically ruined, I mean, it was already ripped off, but I mean, to get out of there, I didn't really have a choice and it actually worked just fine. It wasn't waterproof anymore. And I used that boot a little bit more, after that, but it's first failure I've ever had with them. And I mean, I trust that boot enough that I actually, as soon as I got back, I ordered another pair. I love that boot. Mm-hmm. And I ordered it a half size larger. Yeah. But that's not the norm with them. Those are probably some of the most durable boots I've ever had. And overall, you know, I've had a lot of different pairs of them. So yeah. It's definitely not a normal thing, but, I use those a lot, but the Lathrop and Son got the majority of the use. I had a pair of Zamberlins, and you can remember I'm hunting 7 days a week basically for 3 months, so it's they all get a little bit of use in the rotation. But the Zamberlins were a little bit small too. I mean, when you're putting on a bunch of miles every day in the mountain, it, just having your toes just touching the front of the boot is just it, when you're miserable. Going downhill. Yeah. It causes problems in a hurry. So when I knew I was really going to get after it, especially after the La Sportivas were out of commission, that mountain hunter from Lathrop and Sons was it's probably the most durable boot I've ever had. I look now at my Zamberlins that I wore probably less than I wore the Lathrop and Sons, you know, and I get home and I clean them all up, scrub them up and put some more water repellency stuff on them. In the Lathrop and Sons look, I mean, they look almost like brand new. And the Zamberlin took a hit. It's a very soft sole on them and it took a lot of wear off of it. And the leather didn't hold up nearly as good as the Lathrop's did. But they're all good boots. I mean, it's just, I think that Lathrop, it just fits my foot great.
Dude, that's awesome. I get to go on a doll sheep hunt this year in August and pretty pumped about that. So I'm looking at new boots. I'm doing, so I ran those Solewa Rapaches this last year and I've talked about this a bunch, so I won't completely go over it again, but they were really good boots. But when I got to Kodiak in October, like in the first week of October, I'm pretty sure they started leaking. I still haven't done like a submerged bathtub test yet, just around the foot to see where they were leaking. But there's just no way that my foot could have sweat that much, I don't think. So it's not like a gushing leak, but it's definitely a leak. And it was just, some of it, that's just how Alaska was. But for Western, most of the lower 48 Western stuff, they were perfect for. But I was looking at the La Sportiva Trango Towers.
Mm-hmm. I have not had a chance to check those out yet.
Yeah, they seem like a more, I would want to say, from what I've read, they're a little bit more durable, like heavier pair of cubes. And I love my cubes.
Yeah. No, I love the cube too. Like I said, that was the only problem I've ever had with them. What was the name of it? The Trango Tech was the one I used last year.
The yellow ones. Yeah, they're a little more flexible, aren't they?
Yeah, they were. I used those a lot basically, I used them in Colorado last year, or this is, I guess, was in 2019, and they worked great. But then when I went to the Ibex hunt in New Mexico, where it's, you know, you're almost rock climbing half the time, going up and down. Near vertical faces. I mean, you're just sticking your hands and your feet in little, you know, space between the rocks to try to get a hold and get up and over and try to get in, you know, and get in front of these Ibex. And those, the synthetic boots, if I could give anybody any advice, if you're going to hunt on the, you know, in the Floridas, do not wear a synthetic boot.
Really?
Take a leather boot. Those towers, or not towers, the techs got ripped up bad, like ripped open. It's just not, that place will tear up boots faster than anything I've seen.
Yeah, just all that sharp rock and nasty.
Yeah, stuff. And just the fact that how you have to, you know, if you're going to get up and over these and navigate around and try to get in front of these animals, I mean, you're literally, you know, shoving your feet and, you know, almost using it as a hold to get up or down. So, I mean, I'm sure you could hunt a little less aggressive and your boots would be fine, but I was busting my ass trying to get an Ibex.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. And so I've thought about I looked, I'm going to be in Boise a bit at the beginning of the year. And so I looked at REI there and they almost don't carry very many like La Sportiva boots at all. They didn't have any cubes and the only towers that they had were on sale basically. So I wonder if there's something new going to come out.
Yeah. I've been keeping my eyes open. I always, I follow them, on social media, La Sportiva North America, just to see if there's anything new every year, but yeah, who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But I think what I'm going to do is probably order a new pair of cubes, order a new pair of towers and just wear them around the house and see which ones fit best, and then start using those things in the spring and summer training and see just what fits me best.
Yeah. No, it's hard to beat when you find something that really fits. I think I'm on my third pair of those cubes. I've had the TRKs. It's just, I almost just use it as like a run around town type boot. I mean, just, I wear them to work. I wear them, you know, getting groceries. They're super flexible, but it's like a pair of comfortable running shoes. I think I've had three pair of those too. I just love them.
Yeah.
So once I find one, I just buy a bunch.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So the other thing you talked about that you liked a lot this year was that Snowy Mountain Alpine Hunter. Is that review out yet?
Oh yeah, that came out.
That came out a long time ago. Oh, it was last year. Okay.
Yeah. No, gotcha. I haven't found another rifle that I like more. And I've shot a bunch more. I finally got my tax stamp and I was able to put my Thunderbeast on the end of it. And I love it even more now.
I bet. What's the setup of that?
It's a 28 Nosler. Or do you mean the suppressor or the rifle?
Oh no, just the whole rifle with the optic.
So I put the Zeiss V6 3-18 on it, Conquest. Did a review on that too that came out last year. That scope is still, I don't know what else I've got scopes that cost more on different guns, and I think I like this better than any of them. It hasn't failed, and it's used. And but the rifle that the guys there at Snowy Mountain put together is just, it does everything I ask, and it's when you want to compare it or combine it with the range finding technology that they have. And that was another thing I'm reviewing this year, is Leica's new 3500.com little handheld compact rangefinder. That in my the geovids, I mean, it's just, I find the animal, click on it, dial up the scope, and it's just, it's lights out. I mean, I just, compared to a couple years ago when you had to have turrets cut, or, you know, you didn't quite have the rangefinders that would get all the data as accurately as they do now. It's just, I don't know. I guess I'm just in love with it because it's probably my first custom gun that's truly, I mean, it's capable a whole lot more than I am. So, but there's also, there's part of me too that looks at, you know, I see these new lightweight rifles and these chassis systems, and I'm thinking I probably have to call Paul at Snowy Mountain and like, hey, let's do a super short barrel, you know, like a chassis rifle that I can, you know, have just crazy lightweight, maybe the most folding stocks and dude, something that'll fit right in a backpack.
Yeah, the folding stocks are so nice. And especially when you're going through brush and whatnot, you know, they fit within that, you know, the frame size of your backpack. So they're not just catching on things. And yeah, they're really nice.
Yep. No, it's, yeah, I'm, if I don't ever, you know, yeah, that's always good enough that, I mean, if I don't ever get another, a different deer rifle or elk rifle, I'm completely content. Like it's, just feels good in your hands.
Yeah, I think people really underestimate the power of confidence in a rifle. Mm-hmm. And that's like, that's everything. So when you find a setup that, you know, you build a setup or whatever that you're really confident in and you really like, it's, I think it's hard to just keep bouncing around to different ones once you found that kind of good system for you.
Yeah. I agree 100%.
Yeah, for sure. So on those earlier season hunts too, what'd you do for optics this year?
Ran the almost for spotters. I stuck with the 95.
Oh yeah.
Swarovski up until pretty much entirely in Nevada, and then for scouting in Colorado. And then when I switched over to hunt in Colorado, I went to the 65 objective, but still kept the STX. Ran the Leica geovids still. Even when I was testing the little handheld rangefinder, I still had the geovids around my neck just because I'm just so used to them. And I wanted to be able to compare the two, that they were getting the same data. But yeah, I really, really love the rangefinding binoculars. It's it just, I mean, this little hand operated guy is great, and it's the fastest trigger time I've ever had on any rangefinder, but it's just something about, you know, making one instrument do two jobs, you know, basically eliminating something else out of your pack. And, but yeah, love the geovids.
Yeah. Just those rangefinding binoculars in general, like they're, you know, I'm currently trying to sell my EL ranges just cause I've gotten into something a little bit different that's got ballistics in it and whatnot. And, you know, there's been a few guys that are like, I just can't make myself use a rangefinder binocular combo. They're like, I just don't understand how it's going to be that great. I'm like, dude, once you use it, like, it's just, it's not as big a pain as people think it is.
Mm-mm.
Not at all.
It only weighs a few more ounces, and it's just so convenient to be range, you know, when you're sneaking in on an animal to have your binocular also be a rangefinder. And I've talked to guys that are just the opposite. They'll leave their binocular back at, you know, at their backpack, whatever, when they're making that final move, and just have the little handheld rangefinder. But for me, it's, I can see a lot more with my binoculars than I can in that little teeny 7-power rangefinder. And it's just, you know, you pick up other things. Maybe it's another deer that you didn't notice, or maybe it's, I could see advantages, I guess, to the, just having the handheld, but for me, it's hard to go back.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I totally agree. And then you got to, obviously pack a bunch of meat. What did you use for game bags this year?
Kind of a combination of a mix of everything. I've got so many of those, the older, tag bags, those get mostly used, but I also had, a few years ago, when they first came out, the Ovis bags, that Black Ovis, I still have those. Those are probably the most durable bags I've ever used. And then, what else do we, I think that was it. Just those two brands.
Gotcha. And those keep like the debone, those are all the debone meat bags that keep them all in pretty much a cylindrical shape to fit the backpack better.
Yeah. It's a narrower diameter tube. The tag bags are, and, but the Black Ovis bags that I've got, I got quarter bags and I've got the smaller bags, but they're a little shorter and squattier, which is fine. Just get up, you know, it's not, you can still kind of shape them to that tall, skinny, against the backside of your frame, your backpack, when you're loading it up, and then cinch everything down and keep it, the idea of just not having all that weight pile up into a big round ball further away from your center of mass. So you can still make the bigger bags conform and into a smaller shape similar to the tag bags, but it's hard. The tag bags are hard to beat. I mean, I've still got ones that I've had them for 8 years, I think 7 or 8 years. So, I do need to get more. It seems like every year I'll end up, I'll rip one or something, pulling it off my tree, and it's like, but lose one or two.
Those are great. Yeah, those are both great bags for sure. Man, I know we've kind of been jumping all over the place, but is there anywhere else you wanna go? That's pretty much all I had written down.
I got to do something different this year in Kansas that I hadn't in the past. It was kind of special to me. My dad finally, he's had some health problems and he finally retired, stopped working. He worked on golf courses, and the month of November is pretty busy for them because they're shutting everything down and winterizing. So he could never, go down there with me. And, this year, he just beat cancer. He's had, artery issues. He's had, he's having dizziness issues. He's had, he's had cataract surgery. He's had all different, he's had an NFA knee all in like 2 years. And, I took him down there with me, and he, it's not the typical type, tree stand hunting that he's used to. And I knew he was gonna be pretty limited in mobility, but I was able to, there's a few spots where I was able to put him in a ground blind and, with a decoy set up to lure bucks over to him. And he was able to get his biggest whitetail he's ever shot.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he still hasn't stopped talking about it. Bobcat season just closed here in Michigan, and I went over to pull all my traps from his place, and I went inside, and he still has the rack sitting on the kitchen table. My stepmom said he basically sleeps with it. Now he takes it in the bed with him. So he's I think he's told everybody he knows he's that age where he'll tell you this story, the same story every day, and he forgets he told you the day before, and he's just driving everybody crazy with it. It's pretty funny.
That's awesome.
It was good to get him down there and experience that.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then you're shooting those like that whitetail buck you got this year, you're shooting them on the ground with a bow and a decoy, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's awesome.
Yeah, there's not much for trees around there, and even if there was, if there was, I wouldn't be able to spot them like I am. But it's just so much more fun than it, and honestly, it's more productive. I'd sit my dad in a ground blind, and he might see. I think he shot on the fourth day or fifth day, but prior to that, he's only seen a couple of day or deer every sit. And I'm traveling around, driving from glassing point to glassing point, and I'm probably seeing 100 deer in the morning. Not all bucks, but there's deer all over the place. But your strength there is, if you can get the land, get the permission to hunt, a lot of land, and just cover it, and it's a numbers game. The more deer you look over, the better chance of finding something really big. And then once you do, you're on your feet. And those bucks during the rut down there are so aggressive that you can call them or decoy them in, but the most foolproof way I've found is just, bet them, wait. I almost intentionally wait until, probably the second week in November typically to go down there. And, I want the lockdown phase. I want those bucks to have a hot doe that they've pulled away from all the rest of the deer, and, wait for him to bed, get as close as you can. And I try not to make any, in a perfect situation, I'm not calling to them. I'm just waiting for them to stand up, see that decoy. And you get close enough with that decoy, And it's the first thing they see when they stand up. They've got to make a choice. You know, it's fight or flight. And, you know, it's the old analogy of that people use, you know, I've heard people talk about it with elk. You know, if you get, you know, if you're bugling at him from 200 yards away, it's like he doesn't have to fight. If you're 30 or 40 or 50 yards away and you scream in his face, he pretty much doesn't have a choice. And those bigger, mature bucks, as soon as they see that decoy, it's just game over. I mean, they roll their eyes back in their head and their ears go back and they bristle up and just start stomping their way to you. It's so exciting.
That is awesome. What decoy are you using for that?
The heads up decoy. You can mount it to the bow and, or just take it off real easy and put it right on a ground stake too. So it's, you know, if it's windy, you don't have to have it on the bow. It's the best one I've found.
Yeah, that is awesome. And most of those, I mean, well, just like you said, most of those bucks that are coming into, like, they're aggressive. They're not just, have you shot a buck using a decoy that's just, they just let you get closer because you are a decoy? Like, they're not necessarily all aggressive and coming to you?
No, not really. It's pretty small. You know, it's not a full body decoy like some of the other ones. It's just a shoulder, like a shoulder mount, basically, of a silhouette of a deer. So I have moved through areas. It's probably afforded me a chance to, like, you know, while they could see me, like, move across an area before I could get, you know, behind some other cover. But for the most part, I try not to be moving with it. So I'm not getting closer and showing it. I'm getting closer out of sight. And then, you know, get in a position where when he stands up, he's going to see it. Or if I'm calling him, you know, if I haven't found anything in the morning to put a sneak on and I'm just going to do blind calling, you know, in some of the deeper ravines we've got in little cuts and wood, you know, cottonwoods, whatever, I'll set up in a spot where I'll actually take two of those, one on each side of me at different angles and just put them out and then just start rattling. But I'm not moving in on them necessarily. Gotcha. Showing it to them. Mm-hmm. I have heard of guys doing it, but, I think it just doesn't look as natural. If you're not moving, I think you have a whole lot better chance of them not, you know, realizing something's up.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. They are pretty smart, even when they're all rutted up.
Yeah, when they got a doe with them, sometimes they only got one thing on their mind. So it's definitely the best time to get them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like a blast. Well, man, that's pretty much all I had. I just wanted to roll through your season and talk about some gear and just catch up.
Sounds good. It was great talking to you.
Yeah, you too, Tony. We will get you back on soon.